find it a little difficult to say what the subject matter is going to be, because it's too fundamental to give it a title. I'm going to talk about what there is. See, I'm a philosopher, and I'm not going to argue very much, because if you don't argue with me, I don't know what I think. So if we argue, I say thank you, because going to the courtesy of your taking a different point of view, I understand what I mean.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast formerly known as the Last Turtle Podcast. I am Jay, and I'm here to tell you that the Last Turtle Podcast is dead. Long live the Citizen Philosophy Podcast. So I've updated while resurrected this podcast, which has been dormant for a couple of years, but I intend to keep it going and to do a lot more with it. And one of the reasons I wanted to change the name is because after starting a local meetup called Citizen Philosophy here in Portland, I've realized that this concept, which borrows its name from citizen science, is this idea that it really encapsulates a lot more what I want to do with the podcast and the kind of guests I want to have on. And while I want to have professional philosophers with PhDs and all that, you know, citizen philosophy for me basically means that philosophy shouldn't be practiced or explored or enjoyed only by academics, right? It's just like citizen science, where regular citizens get to participate and do science, even if it's not at the same scope or scale or level or degree as scientists in labs, but it's still open to everyone who's really interested. And I think philosophy lends itself much better to that, because for the most part, no equipment needed. So I've set this up with the intention to invite anyone who wants to participate in philosophy and discuss philosophy without having to know how to quote all the greats or, you know all the terms, but is willing to learn as they go and still are interested in hearing or discussing all of these topics that are encapsulated in this. And so I thought it was a good fit to change the name of the podcast, which is also a lot more descriptive and I think more inviting. And it just so happens that the guest I have today, I would definitely consider a citizen philosopher. I actually forgot to ask him during the conversation. I don't know what he would think about this label applied to him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he would be comfortable with that, given how much philosophy shows up in his projects. So today I'm speaking to Kirby Ferguson, who is a filmmaker and writer and speaker who has created, most famously, the Everything is a Remix web documentary series, and most recently, the This Is Not a Conspiracy Theory documentary. Both are absolutely brilliant, and I'm a big, big fan of those works. They are both available online at everythingisaremix.info and thisisnotaconspiracytheory.com, but I will link to everything in the show notes, so it's easy to find at citizenphilosophy.com. But let me spare you any additional preamble. Here's my conversation with Kirby Ferguson. So I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. We met very briefly, other than on Twitter at XOXO, the festival here in Portland. Mm-hmm. And you've had a bunch of projects that I think a lot of people are aware of, and we're going to get into all of them. But I think your true masterpiece, which I was thinking of where to start, right? Because you've done a lot of things, and you're working on a few things currently. But I think your masterpiece is truly Goody Bag, right? It's funny because in, you know, looking at all your stuff and
that was not what I expected.
Preparing for this, I then discovered just recently,
oh wow,
about Goody Bag. I'm dying to know a little bit about that because those are hilarious.
You went deep, that's good, and
they're like 9 years old or 10 years old,
and or older. I may have uploaded them after, so I'm not sure that those dates on YouTube. I started doing sketch comedy. That was my first thing. I did sketch comedy and street interviews and stuff. So do you mean that, or do you mean the... I also did direct-to-camera stuff that was also called Goody Bag. So I started with sketch comedy, and then when I moved to New York, it was like, oh, I don't have any friends to shoot with anymore. So then I started doing the video blog.
I think those are the only ones that are on your...
It's just you talking with some, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay, so there's that. And that became Everything is a Remix later. But I started with, if you go really deep, some of these sketches are on there as well. So I started doing comedy with my friends, like when digital video hit in like the early aughts or whatever, like it was around 2001 or something like that. Yeah. That's a long motherfucking time ago. So video hit and I was like, oh, you can shoot stuff and it looks relatively good and you can cut it on your computer. Like, holy shit, I'm going to get into that. Cause I was always interested in film, but I thought there's just no way to practice it. There's no way to do it except for shitty analog video, which just didn't remotely get across the ideas, the kind of style that you would want to get across. Yeah. So I was a graphic designer before that. I worked in advertising. So I was good with Photoshop and I was good with graphics and I had some skills going in. Then I was like, yeah, comedy just was my, I was into comedy. It was just a natural place to go. And it has, like, when you're no good, like when your skills are low, it's a good place to start. Cause if it's funny, who gives a shit if your color balance is whack or whatever.
It's a good place to experiment.
Totally. Yeah. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Matter of fact, if it's too slick, that's not funny. Like if it's kind of raw, that's good.
Yeah.
So I started doing sketch comedy bits and then I was in Toronto at that time. I'm from Canada originally. And then I met my wife in New York. Pretty quickly moved to New York. And when I moved to New York, I was like, oh, well, I don't have anybody to shoot comedy with anymore, but I still wanted to make stuff. So I started doing direct-to-camera stuff. And this was when Zay Frank was doing something called The Show then, which was a daily video blog, a very early successful video blog. And I was inspired by that. I was like, wow, like this format's really interesting.
It's like
direct-to-camera, short comedy bits, like super, because it's quick. It's easy. It's not. I mean, I made it difficult, but it's fairly easy in its essence.
Before TikTok and all the vines and all that. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, and cool. Like that's still that genre has become so huge. Now.
Oh, yeah.
It's so big.
Yeah.
But I never got quick at it. Zay did his show daily. I think it was called The Daily. Maybe what was it called? Anyway, he did them every freaking day. Like I don't know how he pulled that off. I think he did it for about a year. He did them daily. That's like an athletic feat. And he was traveling and doing talks and stuff like that. And somehow, like he had a very different process than the way that I work. Like he didn't write. He would just talk. Whereas I write. Like I get things ready to beforehand.
It's crafted,
I rehearse it, and it's very fussy. Like I'm just generally very fussy with my process. It's laborsome, you know. It's slow, and I never
borderline perfectionist.
I don't know if perfectionist is the right word. It's just a laborsome, and it's become worse. We can get to it later when we get to some of the newer stuff.
Yeah.
But like, it's become so glacially slow that I have to like change it and do something else. But it's mostly the product of having a bunch of different aspects that I have to do really well. Like I have to do research really well, and I have to do writing really well, and then I have to do audio production really well, and then I have to do video production, and all the subsets within each of those I have to do really well. So it's too much for one person to do, basically.
Yeah.
So I tried to do them weekly. I think I managed that for a bit, but then they got slower and slower, and it didn't bother me. I was like, I don't care about weekly. I want to make interesting things that are challenging. So they got slower and slower. And they slowly kind of morphed into something that was sort of like Everything is a Remix. And then basically when I did Everything is a Remix was my breakout series that was like went viral and it was really popular and it changed my life. And I quit my job. I was working in video at that point. I had managed to switch over to video production. But when I did that series, that like changed my life pretty quickly, and I quit my job, and I managed, and
I'm assuming you're still a free man.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a long time now.
Yeah,
it's been a while. So basically, that form turned into Everything's Remix. I just thought it's so boring to like. To me, at the time, it was like it's boring to look at somebody's head the whole time. It'd be interesting if like you could see other interesting elements rather than just somebody's mug. So I took myself out of it, and that was how I started.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Looking at those, and I'm glad I stumbled upon that.
Yeah.
Because one, it surprised me a little because Everything is a Remix, and This is Not a Conspiracy Theory seems very serious, right?
There's some jokes in Everything is a Remix, but
100%. But now looking at it in retrospect, I can see one, the style, right?
Yes.
Like the sort of your presentation and your storytelling style is definitely in there. And it looked like a practice kind of a building up that process. So it's very cool. So I do want to get into... So the thing I wanted to talk to you the most about is this is not a conspiracy theory, which
awesome.
We just finished. And it is... Let me get the
That's okay. Everyone's talking about everything. Everything is remixed. I'm so...
No, it's just... It's it was...
But this is my new thing. So this is what I want to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
I think there are some things that stood out there. And I'm just curious about your opinion on some of the aspects of that. Because you're also doing something you're still working on, which is Copy This, the podcast.
It's kind of on hiatus at the moment. Okay. I think they ran out of money or something like that. So that's not my thing. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, they're called the Recreate Coalition, and they're some sort of advocacy group that does, pro, low, liberal copyright policies for tech is their interest.
Oh, interesting.
And I happen
to
be aligned with that,
so
we work together.
I like it because it's bite-sized and it's useful information. And
yes.
I think a theme through your work is like illuminating content, right? It's stuff that you're like, I'm not only learning something, but it's elucidating some aspects, nuances of a lot of things. And so in Everything is a Remix, which I've been sending it to everybody I know, since I stumbled upon it.
That's awesome.
And it's nice. Now you've remastered it like in 2015 and there's like, you can watch it in one shot. Somewhere in there you said, I don't know if it's your quote or somebody else's. I think it's somebody else's, that creation requires influence.
No, that's me, I think.
That is you.
Yeah. I don't know that it's mine.
It's not
original, but I think I got it from somebody else.
I think that's, I've wondered a lot about creativity because I'm curious what you think about, you have gone into great lengths in Everything's a Remix and then following sort of additional videos, you have the four kind of how to get an idea and to work through an idea and to build out an idea, which is fantastic. And so there is a technical process, but there is this thing of thinking some people are more creative than others. Some people maybe have talent.
Yes.
I'm wondering what your thoughts about what that component is. Is it just
having
a matter
talent,
of building
maybe?
Skill? Or are people, some people are just sort of naturally more creative and they just don't know that they're doing the same process?
Oh, I think some people have it and they don't know that they have it, but they got it somehow. Like you got it somehow in your lifestyle. Cory Doctorow has referred to it as like you practiced without knowing that you were practicing. I think that's the essence of it, generally speaking. But some sort of something that's innate. I mean, I think, your psychology certainly can be an aspect of it. Like you can just be wired a certain way. Like you can, some people are, cognitively diverse and they just, like Van Gogh, I think there's evidence that, I don't know what condition he had, but there's evidence that he had some visual condition or neurological condition or whatever. And he actually saw, he actually was depicting what he was seeing to some degree. So sometimes it can just be your wiring, but... Yeah. Generally speaking, I think it's something that you've developed in your life. Like if you're a comedian, for instance, you can just go through your life being funny and then you can just suddenly get up on stage. And as long as you don't choke, you can maybe just be funny right off the bat because you've been doing it your whole life, right? So I think for the most part, when people have talent, it's something that they've been doing for a long time without knowing it. But generally speaking, I think it's a skill like anything else that you develop over time. Like it doesn't matter if you have great natural talent for a sport, let's say, like it doesn't matter. Like unless you develop that talent, it doesn't really matter. Like maybe you'll be better than the guys that you play pickup basketball with or whatever. But if you try to compete with somebody who has very low talent but has skills and has been practicing a lot, like they're going to destroy you. They're going to totally demolish you. So,
It seems like a spectrum where there's a combination of where your starting point was and your proclivity is, plus then how much effort you put into that on top of it.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
basics,
the world discovered not that long ago a phenomenon called apenthesia or
I don't know what that is.
Where there are people who cannot visualize anything in their mind, like visual.
I've heard of that. My wife and I just talked about this. They talked about how some people, I don't know if this is the same thing, but she talked about how some people... It's going viral online right now, I think. But some people don't have... I have an interior monologue, right? Do you have this?
Yep.
You're jabbering in your head like all the fucking time, right? And it's like you wish... You do it so much that you wish you weren't doing it so much, right? And people meditate and go on silence retreats and stuff like that to try to quiet this thing down. And some people don't have that. Have you heard of this?
I have not heard of
Yeah, some people don't have, they don't have a voice going in their head all day long. And apparently it's lots of people. And they also can't read and visual. I hope my wife didn't mangle this. She also claimed that when they read, they can't like visualize what they're reading. So they're just, their brain is wired in a very different way. I don't know if it's related to that concept.
There might be either there's an overlap or there's some people with, or maybe it's related. I definitely know that there are people who can have the monologue, like an auditory thing, but they can't get like visual if they try to imagine an apple or anything, like they can't form
that's
an image
wild
at all
to me.
Which is
that's not me,
the brain side of all of
that.
And I wonder if that affects creativity. Maybe people on the other end of the spectrum just naturally form different connections, can, you know, combine
and
different things.
You're very limited in what you can do if you can't do that. Actually, it sounds like a liability to me. It sounds like kind of it could be good for your, I'm thinking more of the interior monologue.
Yeah,
it seems like it could be good.
Zen.
Yeah, it could be good for your life maybe, but I'm not so sure it'd be good for doing creative work.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
I don't know much about that, so everything I said might be totally wrong.
But that's part of the whole thing of like how the brain works. You had another good one where you collect things from the outside, experiences, information, and then your subconscious cooks the meal, but your conscious mind buys the groceries.
Yes.
I love
correct.
That.
Yes. Yes.
It's brilliant.
That's right.
And it's just the idea where we don't really know where our ideas come from.
So, yeah. That's in the black box.
Yeah. Okay. Let me get to the thing I really want to talk
about. Okay. Yes.
So this has been how long of a project? This is like
almost 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when after Everything Is a Remix, you basically went on Kickstarter, said, hey, I'm doing this project.
Yes.
I'll be honest, I saw the video, the preview, and I was like, I have no idea what this is about.
No, I didn't know.
But after what I've seen, whatever you're working on, here's some money. Please go do this. I want to know what it is. And I can't tell where in, it's because you've been releasing episodes throughout you know, the past several years. And I don't remember at what point it hit me of what this thing really is about. But it was very impactful.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yes.
That was amazing.
Not only, and again, let me get all of the gushing out of the way now so we can talk about the details.
Okay.
It is, people say always like storytelling and all that. It's kind of like the word about, you know, creativity and things like that. But I think your format and the way you've created your material, it's like captivating storytelling.
Great.
Right? It is well crafted, obviously, and you know, you expose your process in videos and other ways. It's obviously like well thought out, well crafted. It takes you a long time. You have collaborators, you know, you work on all the aspects of it until it's very, very good. But it's not just you manage to convey the information really well. I'm captivated like every minute of it. Like it is very impactful.
That's great.
Part of me was resistant in talking about all the details because it's one of those things where I feel like I don't want to spoil it for people, right? Like I don't want to put spoilers. And so it's worth saying that no matter what we talk about, it's not going to convey like a fraction of what this series is. And so I recommend everybody go and watch it. It's just $15, I think. It's well worth it. And so what's your basic description of what the thing is about?
This is not a conspiracy theory. It's about 90 minutes. It's in the style of a conspiracy theory video. So it's a guy, it's me, coincidentally, talking, and then it's found visuals, it's design visuals, it's popular culture, it's media. It's a montage of different sorts of visuals. So it's in the style of conspiracy theory. I wanted to basically do something where I like what conspiracy theories try to do, generally speaking. Like, and I've been around them for a long time now. Like, I've been intrigued by them because I love what they promise. I love that they're like, we're going to lift the curtain. We're going to show you what's really going on. Like, I find that totally sexy. That's completely hot. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Let me in. But then inevitably, they lift the curtain and like, you got to be fucking kidding me, right? Like, it's like, it seems like going to one of those, like, freak shows in the old day where like it's the two-headed cow or whatever and some dead thing that they, you know, sewn a second head onto or whatever, right? Like it's just so disappointing once you actually get in there. So I think that the basic premise of it was like, I want to do that, but I want to be well-researched and not sloppy bullshit like what everybody does. but like something that like is rigorous, like I really tried to get everything right and has some sort of insight into what is going on in the world. Something that, like, I think what conspiracy theories aspire to do is to transform your perceptions, right? Like they want you to look at the world a different way. And you do look at, if you do take that idea on, yeah, that like, oh, somebody's doing everything, then like you do look at the world a different way. Like it's this algorithm that's running in your mind and it transforms how you perceive the world. But I don't think it transforms it in a positive way. I think you're kind of better off without it. I mean, there are aspects of the world that are conspiratorial. Like I think there's some benefit to that, but that's just sort of like the stopped watch being right a couple times a day. Like you're mostly going to be wrong with that. So I want to give people a different way of looking at the world, and that's the objective of the series. And so it's basically a series that's about how showing people don't control society, they don't control the future, and that we are in fact controlled by systems. So I wanted to give people kind of a basic introduction to how complex, what complexity is, how systems work, and like what are these real forces that shape our lives. So it's an attempt to re-gear, give people a new way of looking at the world that I think is more powerful and insightful than the like, oh, just somebody's doing it. It's bad people that are doing it and we have to beat them and then everything's going to be great. And it's a view of the world that isn't super, it doesn't have easy answers. Like it's not like just you got to do this and that and whatever. Like it's, I want to give people a tool so that you can look at the world a different way. And then how you solve problems is still very complex and there's no easy answers there.
I was thinking about it in terms of a tool for critical thinking.
Yeah.
And it seems like a really good antidote to a lot of conspiracy type of thinking.
Yes.
And your timing, I feel like, couldn't be better.
I know, it worked out super crazy well, yeah.
I know. Yeah. And so there are two big components for me. And it sounds like one of them definitely was your goal is a sort of combating, perhaps, I don't know if that's the best word, specifically like the way we're thinking about conspiracy, just in particular, just straight up conspiracies and people espousing conspiracies and believing conspiracies. I'm not going to name names, but I have a really good friend that I love dearly who, you know, got really, really into as deep as possible into conspiracy theories and, you know, was just kind of lost in that world, I think, and has since come out as far as I can tell. But that has brought to my attention a lot of these videos and the type of format. And it only was when I started seeing people and then your web series of breaking down how that's basically put together. And I think, I don't remember who made this, but there was a particular video that someone else made, you know, breaking down the beats and what, and the super tiny mechanisms of a video and how they change the music and what they say and the overlays of images that have nothing to do with what they're saying, but it gives you an emotional sensation with dramatic music, that I started realizing, like, there's a format here that hits something in our brain in a way that's very convincing.
Yes.
Were you ever, you know, taken in by one of those?
God, I can't think of one, man. Maybe Zeitgeist when I originally saw that. I think Zeitgeist, I'm not sure that I've ever said this publicly. I think I was embarrassed about this for a while, but I think Zeitgeist was actually a bit of an influence on Everything as a Remix. Because it had this stuff about, it was probably bullshit. It had this stuff about how Christianity was sort of this remix of other, of Egyptian religions and whatever. Like there are a few different, and pagan religions and stuff like that. They all sort of, there's probably some truth to it, but I doubt the way it's portrayed in the series is correct. But Zeitgeist, I sort of found that stuff, but I don't know that the conspiratorial aspect of it really convinced me. But generally speaking, like even I remember, like, I was youngish in the 90s, and the JFK assassination had a real upsurge then, right? Were into it. Yeah, the Oliver Stone movie in, like, 90, 91, I think it was. There was a real upsurge in conspiratorial, like, conspiracies were, and X-Files was happening, and, like, conspiracies were hot in pop culture more so than, like, in politics or anything like that. It was sort of this just imaginative world that was going on. And like I remember watching JFK and thinking, you got it, like, what the fuck is this? everybody did it, like, what what are you telling me here? This makes no sense. I don't know, like, I've always had, I may have got it from my dad, just some sort of like decent bullshit meter. Like, you really gotta, like, if you're gonna say something, I mean, this is Carl Sagan's line, but extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So if you're gonna say something that is like, whoa, that's a huge statement. Then you better like queue up. Like, I want lots and lots and lots of stuff. Like, I want reams of stuff telling me why that is true. Because that's the way reality works. Like, it's just endlessly true. Like, it's, if you don't believe in evolution, if you look into it, like, you can just spend the less, it's numbing. Like, you can spend the rest of your life looking into why evolution is true. There's just no end to the information out there. And everything points in one direction, or almost everything. So, I mean, my take is generally that reality is endlessly true. There's just endless amounts of evidence out there telling you what is what. So when people make these, so I only say things, I think, in my series that are just obviously true. Like, everything is remixed. To me, like, I'm basically saying that ideas evolve from previous ideas. To me, that's a totally obvious, like, where else do they come from, right?
Right.
And if it doesn't work that way, then why didn't the Egyptians invent the iPhone or whatever? Like, obviously we have to build on the ideas that came before us.
And even that, you point out how nature does that.
Right? Yeah,
so
exactly.
There's no example of human culture. Emergence and all of that.
There's nothing dropping out of the blue.
Right.
The theory of conspiracy theory as well, I think, is one that's just, there's endless, it's not that, there's nothing radical about what I'm saying. It's very much corroborated by many, many, many sources. You can hear it from all sorts of different fields. I won't get too into what it is, but like, it's endlessly, monotonously true. I think I've just put like a pop culture twist on it that hopefully is more fun.
And it seems like it is difficult to... There's an imbalance of having to prove a negative or having to take the time to dismiss every theory that comes along or every supposed evidence that comes along.
Yeah.
And that's a tall order. And in some ways, if people just want to believe something or they don't want you to believe the evidence that you give them, that is an endless moving goal.
Yeah, right, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I will see what happens, but I'm sure I didn't want to be a debunker when I got into this, right? Because that's just a thankless task. And you may as well go vacuum the beach, right? Like,
you're not going anywhere with that.
No. But I do realize there will be some of that going on.
And I'm glad people do that. I'm glad there are people.
Yes, for sure. I think, that's important work that people... There needs to be a countervailing force against the people who are making all these crazy claims. But I personally don't want to do it, but I'm sure I'll have to do some amount of it. So.
Yeah. And I think there's an interesting component about, again, the way our mind works.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into the idea of that... You know, in the past, we had to, we're like pattern recognition machines.
Yes.
We're looking for patterns.
Absolutely.
And we put these together in some sense. And we connect evidence, which is, you know, it's a good system, but then we might come to conclusions that are beyond what the evidence gives you.
Yes.
Especially the more elaborate the explanation,
for
the less likely it is to be true.
Yes. And we've done this throughout human history. So we've used magic, we've used religion, we've used science in more recent centuries. Like, we have all sorts of different methodologies for making sense of nature, and in particular making sense of the unexplainable and the anxiety producing. Why do we die? Like, you need an answer to that. You can't just walk around. You can't have people, you know, your mom and dad and grandpa dying and just think, well, I mean, who knows, really?
I think that the thing that exacerbates that in some ways, it's not only that we're looking for patterns, but we often look for intent.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? And that's where we really get into the modern conspiracies, where somebody is behind this. Someone is orchestrating, someone is trying to achieve a goal, and they have power, and this is why this is happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very Western idea. I don't know how I haven't looked into this, but I don't know how Eastern cultures look at this so much. It seems to me like Eastern religions generally don't have that element so strongly. I'm not sure, though. But yeah, in Western religions, certainly, like, God is some sort of fatherly figure who has a plan, and he has intents, and he's judgmental and stuff. You know, like, he's got... So there's a design, there's providence is going on, you know, like, so I think this idea that projecting like human values onto mystery is something that humans commonly do. And I'm sure it's not just Western religions, that's just what I happen to know something about. But yeah, it seems to be some sort of, I think it's as simple as, you know, I don't have robust reasoning to think this, but it seems as simple as like I live in this body and have a mind, and I have intentions to catch that rabbit or eat those strawberries or whatever. Like that's me. You live with I have intentions, and you have to have plans and execute goals and stay and survive. You know, so I think it's just projecting sort of your interior life onto, you know, the moon and whatever. Like, what's the moon doing? Oh, it has an intention. It's like, that's how you get moon gods and sun gods and all that stuff, right? So I think it could be as simple as just projecting our interior life outward onto the inanimate and other living, the rest of nature.
And it's almost that we can't help but take almost any piece of information that is out there and put it into a story.
Sure.
Or put it into something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We end up with, you know, the stars affecting this or that.
Yes.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, the narrative drive of humans, too, is another aspect of conspiracy theories that I think is really important. Like we, you know, I forget who referred to us as, we're the storytelling animal, right? Like storytelling somehow, like all cultures do it. It's this universal human thing. And conspiracy theories are cool stories, you know, like they're fun, they're dramatic, they have lots of conflict, like they're, especially in the modern, like when I think of stories, I think of more like the modern type, like the movie kind of stories, which is about big conflict, and it's about people, you know, they aren't about, modern stories aren't about, they're not about systems, they're not systemic, they're about people in conflict, they have intentions, they can't get what they want, they need to get what they want, like it's that sort of thing. And conspiracy theories are very much about that. And I just don't think that's the way that the world works. I know that that's going on under the surface. And people think that, I know that Donald Trump thinks he's like making everything happen and the economy's going great because he's doing all these things and all the tweets and everything. But I just don't think it is. It's not like it's so much bigger than you. Like he's so small compared to the free market.
And this is where it gets into the thing that for me was absolutely fascinating and really changed the way I look at the world. And it's weird because I've already was aware of the idea of complexity, the idea of systems, right?
Okay.
But what you've managed to illustrate, and rewatching the series, I'm not even sure you used the word that I ended up using, which is incentives. I think you used rules.
I might have been in there someplace.
It might be just
in passing.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But you suddenly managed to illustrate the idea that we just ended up building systems, right? And those systems sort of take a life of their own.
Yes.
And they have so many elements that include, of course, people more than anything else, but not only people.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's software and AI or, you know, nature and everything else.
Yeah.
And the system just happens to tick, right? And it keeps going, it keeps evolving. There's inputs, there's outputs. And in terms of where humans are involved, the incentives really kind of propel the system.
Yes.
And I started seeing this everywhere.
That's
just
great.
Like absolutely
That's
everywhere.
Awesome.
And suddenly I suddenly see examples like the ones I give when I tell people about this series, which you didn't necessarily include. You mentioned some of these in passing again, but like the idea of the ad model on the internet.
Sure.
You know, we ended up with pay-per-view and pay-per-click.
Yes.
Which in turn optimized for or created incentives for eyeballs, just watching the page, but not actually necessarily reading quality of content.
Yeah.
You get clickbait.
Yes.
You get listicles.
Yes.
You get all these weird things
that if you showed people 20 years ago or whatever, like people are really getting into this, you'd be like, what is this?
It's like, what happened?
Why would anybody look? How sad.
How did we get there?
Totally,
right. And then you get things
I thought about building that out, actually, about making it about the web. But it just seemed too cinematically too drab,
It's just pages from,
from the web. Here's hot takes and here's listicles.
But the
way the rules of the internet have fostered that sort of content. And the rules of the system, they don't create the particular expressions, you know? Like, it's not that controlling, but it incentivizes a certain type of expression, just like Twitter, whether it intends to, and I don't think it does intend to. Like, Facebook and Twitter, they don't intend to have, they want things to be nice on there. Like, that would be their preference, because that's easier to sell, right? They don't want fascists and they don't want like the vicious conflict that's going on in most places, but it rewards engagement. Right. And we, it turns out that we really like outrage is very engaging. Like we didn't like who Tim Berners-Lee, like never would have dreamed of that when he invented the World Wide Web. Right. But, it turns out that the rules of the system of the internet reward outrage. So now we've got this flourishing of outrage. And it's not as simple as just those are the rules of the system and we're screwed, because we also are part of the system, like it's, our
there's
norms.
There's multiple systems.
Yeah, exactly. Together. Interacting, and we're part of it. And in time, you know, we'll get sick of that shit, or it will definitely change. There's no doubt about that. Like, we'll be like, oh, that's enough of the hot takes. Like, yeah. And it'll be super uncool, and there'll be lots of social pressure for people to not share that sort of stuff. And things will change.
And I think that's the other important thing to realize is that it's multiple, and you illustrate this well visually too in the series, but you have multiple systems and components that affect each other, and it's very complex. There's no clearly defined lines. It's fuzzy, which makes it more difficult. But if you look at something like you have the one of the biggest incentive systems, right, which is money, right? People trying to make money. You have the human psyche, right, and the way that functions. And then you have the ad model of the internet, and you get all of these tweaks to get us to scroll more and you know, page views and the little alerts and all that kind of stuff, and you end up with the system that you have that has you know, unintended consequences.
Yes, it rewards and fosters that sort of behavior. Yeah.
And I think as long as we're looking for someone to blame or someone that is trying to do this, and we need to eliminate them or change the person in charge or something like that, which may have effect on the system. Obviously, we can affect the system, but it's not
saying you shouldn't do that. Yeah,
right. Exactly.
And yeah, so, like, should you care about Trump if you were opposed to? No, like, no, you should. Right. You should care about
because
Trump.
Some people have a lot more influence on the system than others.
Sure.
Elon Musk and you know Trump or various examples in different ways, but seeing that the system is complex. It's sort of the first step to really trying to even think about influencing it or changing it. And so, you know, I'll give one more example that's kind of different than that, that I suddenly noticed. At least in my mind, this is an example. I remember the year, a few years ago, the FBI was, you know, harassing Apple to create a backdoor to their operating system. And people started when it became the general opinion, at least in my bubble, that the FBI is sort of evil, and it's like the deep state, and they're really trying to take everybody's rights away. And it was around that time that I, you know, your web series kind of gave me this perspective shift, and I suddenly thought, I don't think there are people at the head of the FBI who are evil, who are trying to do something. This is more like, I started looking at it, at the system of the FBI, like an AI. Okay, maybe a rogue AI, but an AI that was tasked with something.
Yes.
And that's its incentive, protect the American people.
Yes.
Right? And it has parameters, but maybe the refinement of the parameters is like, at all costs, protect the American people, even at the expense of their privacy and maybe security and so on.
Yes.
And it's not that these people are evil or somebody at the head of them. Yeah. They're just like doing everything they can to have all the tools and control to be able to accomplish the task.
Yes,
it's like a paperclip maximizer.
exactly.
A lot more complex.
Totally.
And I think once I saw those kind of various examples, you know, I see it at work, right? If you know, if I'm doing technical support and your matrix for like success is, you know, how many tickets you solve in what amount of time, you might be optimizing for one thing. Where if you look at, you know, customer rating success, you be optimizing for another thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have to realize, how are you measuring customer success? Is it just like a thumbs up, thumbs down? Is it like a scale of 10? Are you asking specific questions? Are you asking the right questions?
Yeah.
And this is where complexity comes in.
Yeah.
And leads me to the thing that I wanted to ask you about it when you think about these things. Other than being aware of all of this, what are the things that we can do or think about to kind of watch out for these things or be careful or be able to change? The only thing that came to my mind is building in feedback loops.
Sure.
Right? Something that examines the system within the system.
Yes, that's massive.
Laws that have auto expiration dates or auto renewal, you know, renewal dates that require re-examining. Is this law still serving the original purpose that it was serving?
Yeah.
Things like that. What do you
think? I think the main points that I wanted to get across is that we traffic a lot in predictions. Like, once you start noticing predictions in the world, like, they're everywhere. Like, so much of what people say is predictions. They've got these predictions because they've got these theories in their head about how the world works, and they're full of predictions. Like they're just spitting out predictions all the time. One of the lessons of the series, I think, is that predictions are, generally speaking, worthless. Like, there are certain generalized predictions that we can make. Like, we can predict
it depends on
climate change.
System,
like, climate change, right, yeah. You can look at the trend line going back 150 years. Okay. Right. You could say, I think it's probably going to get hotter for a while. Like, we've got a trend line going in one direction. And there's lots of evidence for why that is happening and why that is true. And why we're doing it, why it's human influence that's doing it. So there are generalized kinds of predictions that we can make, but generally speaking, predictions that have any sort of specificity to them have very low value. So stripping out predictions is very important. Just being super humble about your predictions. Yeah. Like, you can even see the failure. To me, the actual project was an eye-opening experience, right? Because I thought it was going to take 2 years. It ended up taking 8 years, right? Like everybody, maybe don't do it as badly as I did it, but like everybody has that stupid optimism, right? Of like, it's going to take 6 months. Like, no, it's
going to triple. Especially when you tell it to a client.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because you're trying to make it sound, you want the gig or whatever, and you're trying to make it sound really good.
Right.
It's this stupid optimism that we all have. You're trying to please people with the delivery date that you give, right? And generally speaking, I would say triple it is good advice. Triple it. Totally, yeah. So beware of predictions is one of the lessons of the series. And that's layered in there in a bunch of different ways. And I think like one of the main things that the complexity mindset to me conveys, it isn't so much about what you should do. It's about what you shouldn't do. Like, I think it strips out a lot of bullshit. Like, I think it shows you that, like, once you are more humble, once you understand that it's unpredictable, I make these changes, it is unpredictable what's going to happen. And it should be another lesson, of course, that you should be focused on rules. And I use the word rules loosely. Right. Like, rules can be norms. That can be like how are things
system? Yeah,
yeah. Where the behaviors in our office,
habits.
The personal habits that you have in your life, the norms in your office, whatever. Technology is rules. So I use using the word rules very loosely. So pay attention to the rules. It's not so much about like punishing this person or removing that person or whatever. Like, what is the structure that you've built? What are the rules that are in place? Pay attention to those. But also, what's going to happen is super unpredictable. Like, you can put excellent rules in place that sound great. That's when people should be really wary of something like a universal basic income. That sounds great. That's a nice idea. I think everybody should have there should be some sort of base level income that everybody has somehow. So there's sort of a safety net that society has. But what that will actually mean once you institute it is a total mystery. Yeah, we cannot know what's going to happen. And that's why, you know, something like
experiments.
Pilot programs is a great way to start.
But the scale might be still.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It might work on the small scale, but it won't work on the large scale. So it's still very mysterious. And you should be prepared for the negative, the unintended consequences of it as well. So I think that's another important concept is unintended consequences. I don't talk about this in series, but delays, like being aware of the concept of delays, like it amazes me that when we talk about presidents, generally speaking, it's like, oh, like look at this, these 4 years, and that's what he did in these 4 years. Like you think there's not, like you think think the stuff didn't carry over. You think Barack Obama doesn't have stuff that came from Bush or from Reagan or Clinton or whoever. Yeah. Like there's stuff that, you know, these things
it
take years
to
the dominoes to fall through the system. So delays. Feedback, again, this is stuff I don't talk about in the series, but feedback is incredibly important. I thought actually the whole series would be about feedback at one point. I wanted to just kind of be more generalized than that rather than getting into something, a sort of specific widget like that. But feedback, generally speaking, being aware of the concept of feedback, even in like, I think like in our relationships is a good way to think of feedback in a very simple way. Like when you stop looking at, so many couples do this. Like they look at it as like, you're doing this, whatever. You would just stop doing whatever you're doing to me. Like everything would be great. If you would just stop being an asshole, we'd just be super. Whereas if you look at it as feedback, like you're not just doing what you're doing in the relationship, like you're responding, it's feedback. You are responding to me and I'm getting that back. And there's a cycle between us of feedback.
Part of the system,
we're both, like that's so much more productive of a way to look at problems, yeah. right? So looking at, if you can shift your, I'll probably make a video about feedback at some point because I have stuff about it that ended up not going into yeah. the series, but feedback is a super vital. When you're talking about incentives, like that's feedback, right? Like yeah. that's, so feedback is a super vital, important, and transformative concept that I'd love to see people understand better as well. But generally speaking, I think what I was trying to convey was the unpredictability of changing rules. Like you cannot know what's going to happen, and a kind of modesty that needs to accompany, that accompanies that sort of view. Like just being aware that like I have these good intentions and I want to do good things, but shitty stuff might happen. Like we go into our idea, into our projects thinking like, I've got good intentions and I'm a good person, I'm going to do good things. And when the shitty things happen, we can like, evade them and obfuscate yeah. and like avoid responsibility for them, instead of just thinking of it as, you know, these are the unintended consequences of my good intentions.
Yeah.
And just looking at the world that way, and being aware that like your political candidate that you support, like I like their ideas, they sound really good, but once we do this, whatever, once we have a wealth tax or whatever, like there could be massively negative consequences to that as well. So having some caution and some modesty about the what knobs you twist to, right. to make things happen.
Recalibrating our expectations, being yeah. aware that our predictions are not going to be accurate.
Yes. Yeah.
And all of that has a feeling like it's both reassuring in some ways and both kind of
yeah,
can make
scary.
You feel yeah, yeah it's sure, very scary yeah. because
that somebody's in control even if they have bad intentions. That's kind of comforting, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I think, you know, the idea of God is comforting.
Yeah,
to
totally.
Many people.
Absolutely.
And that was the like I'll admit I go through life with the feeling of like it does seem just too complex, and now it's getting more and more complex, especially
yeah.
society.
Yeah.
There's too much going on in the technology. And it feels disempowering
in
some
ways. Or in the culture as well. Right. Like just figuring out like with the new gender shifts that are going. Yeah. And like, what do you call people? And
yeah.
like, especially if you're older, like how do people keep track of this
yeah.
stuff? You know, like I can't imagine.
And I think there is somewhere the desire to go like, if I could just figure out enough of it, maybe I can influence it, hopefully for the better. Right.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And I think there are people who sort of try and to a large degree succeed
sure.
for better or worse. I
yes.
think, you know, again, common example is Elon Musk that goes like, I think I know how to, you know, revise the system, but like changing something
yeah.
at a scale. And that definitely has influence. I think
absolutely.
People like that need to be careful where they wield that,
yes,
that motion.
For sure.
But it's also one of those things where, I mean, it's kind of out of control. People will do that for better or worse, and it will affect the system, and hopefully it all comes out in the wash and improves everything. But
yes.
it's really difficult, and that's why I think the awareness of that is critical. But it is somewhat comforting in a sense that, like, okay, there aren't these people who are, like, really controlling the system.
Yeah.
It is very complex, and the unpredictability should, at least, if you're aware of it well and can think about it in those terms, should tell you, like, well, because it's unpredictable, I don't actually know it's all going to go to shit.
Yes.
Like,
for sure. Climate change, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I think that, yes, maybe technology got us in this mess and making things worse. I think we are, our ingenuity can allow for us to figure these things out, and awareness
yep.
is growing. And
yep.
so it's all a mixed bag. Technology, I do think in some ways is really neutral, but it's how we implement it,
sure.
right? And we change how we implement it over time. Which, you know, hopefully ends up mm-hmm. in a better place. But the sheer complexity, and I think no one is appreciating the scale of the complexity
yes.
and intricacy of all of those systems and how they intertwine. It's just impossible
think,
to do.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think that's something that I settled on trying to get across, is just understanding like how little you can understand as well is really important. Like that sounds like it's a depressing thought almost, right? Like, cause we have this idiotic confidence, right? About what is going on in the world. Like you've got your ideology, like I'm
right.
a libertarian or whatever, and I've got it all figured out. I know it. And if only we do these pure libertarian policies, then everything would just be ducky, right? But it's just, things are just not that, the scale of it, even the scale of like the stock market boggles people endlessly. That's just one. That's just a handful of sand on the beach, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
that's just one small thing. So just understanding the scale of this society that we live in and how endlessly baffling it is, and how all you can do, like that you just, I think it's kind of freeing in that, like, you can't, like, don't expect to have mastery over, like, number one,
don't try.
You'll be more cautious with things that you do, which I think is generally speaking a good idea, but also you're not so hard on yourself, and it's just a more realistic way of looking at, because otherwise you're in the dark, like, you've got this idiotic confidence will get you, overconfidence will get you killed, right? Like, I think overconfidence, generally speaking, is a shitty quality. Like, I don't think it helps in art. Like, I've known people who get overconfident in their art, right? And I think that's a really lousy, I don't think it helps you in your art at all. And I don't think it helps you in your, there is a place for this, for just this naive, like, it's going to be great and I'm going to do it. But at the same time, having some awareness under the surface, at least, that I don't know what's going to happen, you know, and I'm not responsible for what's going to happen. It's sort of, I do think of it as sort of being a kind of Zen freeing.
Yeah. You need enough confidence to get you going. But hopefully not too much that you're oblivious to your
and I think you can have confidence. Yeah, I think you can have confidence and have, like, under it a realistic sort of vision of how the world works.
And, like, build it on experience rather than, like, just your imagination.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, like, I think you can have enough confidence to think creatively, like, I've got game, I'm good. Like, do I think I'm, like, the greatest thing in the world? You know, no, not necessarily, but are there people who are way better at different aspects of things than I am? Like, that's a realistic way of looking at things, right? Like, no matter what you are, if you're a songwriter or whatever, like, you're not the best guitar player, you're not the best composer, whatever. Like, there's people who are many, many leagues beyond you out there. But you can still go out in the world thinking, like, I've got this interesting mix of things. You know, nobody has, that's true, that nobody has this particular mix of talents that I have. Yeah. And I've got game. I'm good. You know, like, I kind of know where I am in the scheme of things. And if you're good, then anything can happen. Even if you're not good, anything can happen as well, right? Yeah. Like, you can also look at it that way. Like, hey, maybe I'm not that great, but, like, not everybody wants great in their songs or whatever, you know?
So. And it's worth to be aware of, like, the sheer, you know, randomness of some elements, or at least, again, luck,
absolutely, like,
so if you do go for it, if you interact with systems, you, just by the sheer fact that you are interacting, putting out material, trying new things, talking to other people, and so on, you will end up in situations that might be, you know, productive or good and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And on the larger scale, like a social scale or economic scale, and those, you point that out in the series, our confidence comes from having had good predictability with some systems, right? Like, we've developed science.
Oh,
we can send somebody to the moon with like high precision.
We can know that comet's going wherever. Right. Yeah.
And then we come to these systems that are.
And I think that's, we haven't talked about it, but I think that's massively influential on Western culture, right? That predictability that we had in modern science.
Clockwork universe.
That is a massively influential idea. And I think we just mapped that onto society. And I think that's just in our DNA, cultural DNA at this point, that we sort of think things work like that, and they definitely don't.
Part of the interesting thing, and I haven't found exactly the component here, it's not just that those systems are necessarily more complex, because you give that amazing example of the game of life, right? Where you have very simple rules, and it's just bafflingly unpredictable, for almost instantly, right? And so I wonder what it is different from, you know, physics about social structures and other you know, economic structures that are so unpredictable.
Right.
Is just more elements, or just the rules happen to be different?
Yeah, somebody who knows complexity science would know better than me. But I think it's about that there is feedback there. I will probably mangle this, take this with a grain of salt. But I think it's that there's dependencies between the elements, that there is feedback between them, or that there's some sort of decision-making. There's some sort of decision-making between the elements. Like, even in the game of life, there's rules, like the cells, people aren't going to want to talk about, but the cells in the game, and the game's more of like a demonstration, more so than an actual game, but they make little decisions about, okay, I've got two neighbors, so I'm going to die, or I've got three neighbors. So they make these little decisions. So I think it's about having agents. I think complexity scientists might agree with what I'm going to say here.
Sounding right.
Yeah, it's about having agents that make decisions. Like, an atom doesn't make decisions, right? It just does what it's going to do. The rules are consistent all the time, and there's predictability to that. Whereas with ants or people or neurons, you don't quite know what they're going to do under certain circumstances, right? Like they make decisions,
right.
Even if they're very simple decisions of just on or off or whatever. And that creates, like in the game of life, they just make very simple decisions about whether I'm here or not. And that creates this endless complexity.
I think with humans and society and so on, there are like so many subsystems that are in and of themselves are complex with decision making. So you have humans interacting and you have, you know, brains and neurons and so on. And it scales down all the way and transcends and includes, you know, physics. And so you get this, continuously emerging, levels, right?
Yep.
In which could behave completely differently
at
their level of complexity.
Yeah.
So for me, this is fascinating because it's, again, like I said earlier, it's illuminating, but it's really useful. It's really...
That's right.
It makes I'm less angry at the world.
That's awesome, man. That's so great. I am too. That's so great.
You know, I don't take things as personally, whether it's, you know, the way my company behaves about some things or the way, you know, the government behaves about some things or systems that are really less kind of managed necessarily by people.
Yeah.
And I can maybe do something about it or not. I can, you know, at least understand it and not get, I feel like to some degree, I'm less battered by the world.
Do you feel like you got that from This Is Not a Conspiracy Theory, or did it send you on a journey someplace else that gave you that?
I think that's probably hard to say. And this is like, My own remix.
Because I feel that way as well. I'm not like, did I? And I hope that's something that came across somehow.
In my brain, it has, because when I saw you, I think it was this past XOXO that we...
Yeah, or the one before, I think.
Yeah, that I was like already like waiting to tell you. And I've been waiting years. and that's fine. I've been waiting years for you to finish the show so I can like start sending it to people, because
that's
I wanted to send it as a package. But it's been, you know, it's been sitting in my brain, and I started working on, and I'm surprised it's not already a thing. I want to like almost write a book about just incentives, which is, I think the human subset of rules.
We need that you should absolutely do that.
And so in large part, it's already, since the moment that bug got into my head, in a sense, in a good sense, it's been highly correlated with the web series. So I do think there's something...
That's awesome.
And of course, like, there were components in my mind already. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a philosophy podcast, and I think about those things, and I'm curious, maybe we should, you know, that's a dangerous tangent to get into, but like about free will, right? We have, we have like this big system, and maybe Laplace's demon can predict everything in theory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you believe that or not, but we probably, even
well, he's
with
in
the
series.
Eye, he's he is in series. Yeah. I know. Simon Laplace.
Pierre
Simon Laplace. But again, I think from our perspective, even as machines get better and we'll get better at some predicting some things, the sheer complexity is just really beyond us. But I do think that I think there were components in my mind before I watched this series.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think as with the release cycle of the episodes too, I think as you were revealing more aspects of it and breaking down examples more, and getting into the crescendo of really kind of spelling it out at the end and getting to the systems part of it, right?
Yeah.
After you know, kind of illustrate the whole conspiracy mindset and how we look at things, and then you get to the systems and the details and the rules, I think it really kind of solidified and helped me put all of the components that perhaps were mostly there to begin
with. It might, like, part of it might be that, like, then you can look... Like, if you have kind of a conspiratorial view and you're concerned about climate change, as a lot of, like, young people are now, I would be thoroughly freaked out if I was a young, like, a teenager now. Like, I do not blame people for being really angry. But the way that you would look at that problem, if you got the conspiratorial mindset, would be like, these fuckers have just been they've just been raping nature for decades and centuries now, and now look at us, we're all screwed. But I think the systemic way of looking at it is, if you were a cog in that machine, I'll use a machine metaphor for what I try to avoid them, but generally speaking, if you hopped in a time machine, like, you would drive your car and go get in a plane and do all the things that we did that got us into the the place that we're at now. So, like, it removes some of that. Like, when you have that feeling of just, like, somebody's doing this shitty stuff that's all around us, when you kind of, and I do think that happens, naturally. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen, and there's plenty of conspiracies that are in the series that I talk about that are real.
Actual, yeah.
Yeah, they definitely happen. They're not rare.
That lends credence to the idea of conspiracies, right?
Yeah.
And that's what makes
sure.
us more suspicious.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure, yeah. So, like, I think it's a way to look at problems that can hurt you a lot, that can frighten you, can hurt you a lot, but you can look at them as systems rather than as these people are doing shitty things to me.
I will say this about the series, that definitely that the impact came from there. So, again, recently over the last few years, especially with Twitter, where I spend most of my time, you know, I left Twitter, like, sorry, I left Facebook, you know, several years ago,
yeah.
But I still have Reddit and Twitter and so on. And the kind of conversations and the kind of attitude, right, looking for intent in everything people say, like having the less charitable interpretation of what everybody does or says,
yes,
is kind of like a mini conspiracy, right? Like they,
yes.
There's nefariousness yes. going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, or just thinking that people don't mean what they're saying, generally
right.
speaking, right? Like this happens in like woke culture. Like I see people who are on the right saying, like, these people are woke, like they don't really mean it. I think generally speaking, people mean what they say, you know? Like I think that's,
yeah.
I don't know if this is related to my show necessarily, but like,
no, but it's still
just like people, that's a conspiratorial idea, that
right.
there's some sort of facade, there's some sort of illusion that they're foisting on you, right? But I think generally, a lot of the time, people mean, and I know that there's real complications
sure,
there with bots and trolls and all that stuff, but especially if you know people, like if these are people in your social circles or whatever, like mostly people
yeah.
mean what they say. Like I'd have to go hunt. Like I can't think of anything that I've said in social media in many years that I didn't mean it. And I'm sure there's things
right.
in there I'd regret saying.
Right. You might,
but
you might
I
change,
meant them.
That's the other thing, allowing people to change their mind over
yes,
time, right?
Absolutely.
Like we all
yeah.
grow and evolve, hopefully.
Yes.
But I've seen many cases of taking things out of context.
Yeah.
Sometimes it seems purposefully kind of
oh, yeah.
being, you know,
sure.
Ignorant on purpose
yes.
for
Absolutely.
About some
yeah.
of these things. And so as this was all happening, even a lot of people on, quote unquote, my side, right? Like people
yes.
that I agree with about like 90%+ of the things.
Sure.
And they look at what Trump is doing, what the government is doing, what this person or that person or this system or,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of those kinds of things. Like the police is X or this is
yeah,
Y.
Yeah, yeah.
I started seeing that kind of conspiracy mindset
yes.
and assigning intent and nefariousness, and then your series came in and I started seeing it from that lens, and
yeah.
I immediately saw that one, I don't always know, right? Like it's hard to just say I don't know what
yes.
what's really behind this.
Right.
What do I actually know? What is the evidence? What is it? And you can still come up with a theory. You can still, but you have to hold it in such a way where you're like, all right, let me examine if this is the way
yeah.
I think it is.
Well, just being aware that it's a theory
exactly.
helps as well, right? Like,
right.
I think most of the time we think our theories are real, right?
Right.
We think, like, I have, the, like, what this, like, my notion about what this person intends, that's just real. Like, that you're a racist, that's just, that's your theory about who that person is,
right.
right?
Right.
And you just think that's real. But just being aware that there is this, there's this prism between you and them. There is this mental model between you and them that is interpreting
right.
What's coming at you. Just, I think it just allows you to like hold things more gently, right? Like your beliefs, you can hold them more gently. Like you're not so attached to them. You can put them down if you need to. They aren't just embedded in you, like
right.
ingrained into your brain and into your psyche and into your personality and who you are. And then
oh, yeah.
if somebody attacks me, it's like, well,
identity,
fuck you. Yeah,
yeah,
that's me. Like, fuck you. So I think that helps a lot as well.
The way I said it is, we can't help but have beliefs. We can't help but have
yes,
theories
sure.
about
yeah.
the world. As long as we can, to the degree that we can,
yeah.
realize that they are just beliefs, and
yes.
we'll have more confidence or less confidence in some of them, and keep revising
yes.
that, the credence, right? The,
yeah.
the
and predictions and stories.
Right.
And, yeah, we do all these things.
And the series really snapped me out of, I got embedded in that lens of like everyone is out to get everyone else
right.
or something like that.
Right.
And it really snapped me out of that. And
yeah.
I don't think I've fallen into that sense, which
right.
which is a big part why I send this down.
That's cool.
It's wonderful. And it
That's
might
so
not
great.
Have the same impact on everyone,
sure.
but
yeah.
it is as good of an illustration of that idea as I've seen so far.
That's awesome, man.
Marvelous.
That's so good to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for
my pleasure, man.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Is, awesome.
So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. like I mentioned in the conversation, we barely scratched the surface, especially of This Is Not a Conspiracy Theory, and I cannot recommend enough you watch it. And it is a measly $15 and worth every penny. So go to thisisnotaconspiracytheory.com and check out the show notes for everything else. You can also support the podcast if you'd like at citizenphilosophy.com/support. And until next time, thank you for listening.